3, 2, 1.
Welcome to It's Fabulous!
True personal story.
Exfabula is a Milwaukee nonprofit committed to strengthening community bonds through the art of storytelling.
And it is Exfabula Radio time once again, part of Lake Effect Weekend on WUWM. I'm Bruce Winter with Exfabula co-founder Leah Delaney, and we've been talking about this all year, and it's finally almost here.
I know. All I want to keep doing is singing the Bugs Bunny theme song, that overture song, because we are here, folks, at our All-Stars event, Season 8, Story Slam Grand Finale.
It is finally here. Yeah, it seems like we've been talking about it since September of last year.
Yeah, well, you know, it's something to gear up for. And over the past few weeks, we've been featuring all of the Season 8 Story Slam audience favorites. Today is going to be the last two, the March and April favorites. And after that, we just head right over to Turner Hall Ballroom, May 18th. That's next week.
Yeah, Thursday.
Yeah. And everybody that won this season, all of those audience favorites, are going to get back up on stage at Turner Hall Ballroom, and they're going to tell a longer form story based on a completely different theme this time, which is unfinished business.
And as we have been listening over the past weeks, you can tell why these stories were the audience favorites for the night of the Story Slams, because these are good.
Most definitely. Yeah, I can't wait to see what's coming up on stage next week. You know, we've had a really incredible season, and, you know, we couldn't have done this work without our season sponsors. So, again, three cheers to them as well. So let's march right into the stories with our March winner. Acquired taste was the theme for the night of that Story Slam. The audience favorite was Joel Dreesing. So let's listen to Joel's story from Acquired Taste.
Scotch leaves a bad taste in my mouth. It's what my dad drank. It tastes like medicine, like topical medicine, not the kind that you put in your mouth, the kind you put on a carbuncle. As many times as I told my dad as I declined scotch, my dad always invited me to join him for scotch. Scotch was just one of the things that my dad was always trying to share with me that I shunned. He was a good golfer. In the Depression, he was a caddy at a golf course, and he took whatever clubs he found in the lost and found, and he taught himself to golf, and he became an assistant pro. And he always wondered, he was always trying to get me to take up golf. That's where the deals are made, he'd say. That's where you can schmooze your boss. But I declined. I declined to take chemistry in high school just because Dad eventually became a chemist. He started working in the paper mill and got a job in the lab and eventually worked his way up to supervisor. And he couldn't understand why I didn't want to take chemistry, the central science. He just didn't understand that we didn't share the same tastes. He liked tinkering and gardening. I liked the Packers and TV. One of my first memories was crawling up on Dad's lap and wrapping my little arm around his neck and sharing hugs and kisses and I love yous. I had these plastic barrels. They were like Russian nesting dolls. And my dad was smoking after dinner one night, and he took one of the barrels and he blew some smoke in it and sealed the barrel up, and I ran with it into the kitchen where my mom was washing dishes, and I opened it up, and this big cloud of smoke came out, and my mom gasped, and she coughed, and I laughed. My dad stopped smoking after the Surgeon General said it wasn't good for your health. I can't remember when we stopped the kisses and the I love yous. As I got older, I involved myself in more extracurricular activities so that I'd have excuses to decline Dad's invitations to go fishing with him or to help him work on the car. He took a lot of pride in the car, and when I got old enough, he was always asking me if I wanted to take it, and I declined. I'd rather walk. One time he took me deer hunting with him. We got up real early in the morning and went to my Aunt Rosie's farm and got in the cold and in the dark and situated ourselves in a strategic spot. And my dad got all settled and his gun at the ready, and he looked at me and he said, "Wake me if you see anything." After a while, a deer approached, a buck, a big buck. It was awesome. Step by step, I watched it come closer, and I glanced at my dad, and he's still a snooze. The big buck came closer and closer, and Dad was snoring softly. When we got into the house for lunch, my cousin said, "Uncle Nubs, how come you didn't shoot at that big buck that we sent your way? Everybody saw it headed right toward you." And my dad looked at me, and I just shrugged. I wasn't a defiant kid or disrespectful or discourteous, but I know now that I was another obnoxious, obstinate adolescent. Over time and distance, I grew to appreciate my dad. He was a good guy. He was good to us 7 kids. He loved our mom. He went out of his way for strangers. When he was young, he planted forests for the Civilian Conservation Corps, and he fought in the World War. In his retirement, he took meals to the homeless, and he built Habitats for Humanity. He served in the Honor Guard for countless numbers of veterans' funerals. And, of course, by the time I recognized all that, I had already squandered all those chances to get to know him. I had already declined all those invitations to do things with him. And I know how much that would have meant to him then and how much it would have meant to me now. And I don't put stock in regrets because you can't change what's been. But I try to be a better son by trying to be a better father and a better husband and trying to be more like my dad. It was a few days after his birthday when I got a call that they were situating him into a hospice center and his heart stopped for good. And I got there and my sister Karen had a bottle of my dad's scotch and she poured me a glass and I drank to his life and his passing. And it's still hard to swallow.
And that was Joel Driesing's audience favorite of the night from our Acquired Taste Story Slam. We're going to move right along, actually. Yeah. Let's just jump right into our next story. In April, we took the stage at 3041 North, which is a fantastic event space, where Peter May won the audience favorite for that night. That theme was really special because it was only in Milwaukee. So let's listen to Peter May's story.
In Milwaukee, especially on the south side, if you got something you want to get rid of, but you don't want to throw it away, and it's too much trouble to sell, you put it out on the curb. Right? And that's the rule. You put it out there, it's free for the taking. So I drive to work one morning, and I pass this house, and there are 6 rocks sitting by the curb, along neatly by the curb, but actually arranged in order of size from the smallest to the largest. So, coincidentally, I have always wanted a rock garden. Okay, here's a fun fact. Granite weighs 208 pounds per cubic foot. I learned that later. So, I drive by each day, and the rocks are still there, the rocks are still there. And the tension is building because I want to get these sweet rocks before somebody else picks them up, you know? So that Saturday night, after Saturday Night Live and a bottle of Cabernet, I decide I'm going to go get those rocks. So I jump in my station wagon, drive over there, and attack the first rock. So you squat down, always lift with your legs, right? So I squat down, pick this thing up, get it up to, you know, the height of, you know, a deadlift, and then walk it over to my car and put it in the back of the station wagon. All right. Second rock, same thing. Squat, lift, waddle over to the car, put it in the back of the station wagon. By the third rock, I am sweating and straining. Let me give you a little insight about aging. I'm 63 years old. I can act 59 if I have to, but I'm 63 years old. But up here, I'm still 23, and I think no matter how old you get, you still got, you know. So this immature and difficult 23-year-old says, "Hey, you only got 3 of 6 rocks. You got to get at least 4." Well, reason took over, And I decide, okay, I'm going to drive back home, drop off the first three rocks, rest, and then I have a hand truck. I'm just going to go over there and walk the last rock back. So, 2 a.m. now. I'm at the curb, and here's my plan. You know, a hand truck, you got, you know. I decide what I'm going to do is tilt the blade up so that it's on the curb, and then I can just roll the rock onto the blade, right? So that's what I do. I start to roll the rock onto the blade. Now, I don't know what happened next, but this is my best guess. I think what happened is when the rock got over center, it fell forward and pushed the hand truck away a little bit. The hand truck started falling over, the rock hit the blade on the hand truck and stood it up violently. Now, head trauma would stop most guys. So, the next morning, Sunday morning, I wake up, I've got a lump on my head, and my wife wants to know why there are four rocks out in the driveway. And I explain the whole thing, out by the curb, there for the taking, anyone can have them, I always wanted a rock garden, you know, so I got these rocks, right? And she said, they're all lined up on the curb. And I said, yeah. She said, well, maybe they were just delivered. And I thought, that kind of makes sense. So I drive by this house all the time. So one time, there's a lady out working in the yard. And so I figure, you know, I got to ask. So, you know, excuse me, funny story, you know. Turns out Ruth is right. I had stolen this lady's rocks. So I apologized profusely. I offered to return them. She said, no, you know, I got them for free. And you know, I only really, the two I got will be enough for what. I'll have my son move them into the backyard, I guess to protect them from people like me, you know. So sure enough, next time I drive by, the two rocks are missing. And I really hope the son moved them to the back. And it wasn't just another Southsider who drove by and went, oh, free rocks. You know?
And that was the audience favorite from our April Story Slam, which was only in Milwaukee. That was Peter May telling us his story.
That is truly an only in Milwaukee thing, where if you just take something and leave it out at the curbside, the next morning it's gone. So it just disappears.
Yeah, you don't need like Craigslist or Facebook for that.
It's gone, yeah. Got this old television set, gone. So whatever.
Indeed. Yeah, you know what else is almost gone? Season 8.
Yeah. And
I can't believe it.
Let's remind everybody about the show coming up on Thursday.
Yeah, I will do that. It's going to be on Thursday, May 18th at Turner Hall Ballroom. It is our May All-Stars Grand Finale Story Slam of the Year. And you can get all information plus your tickets at xfabula.org. Oh, and I do want to add one more thing. If you, the listening audience, love Xfabula, have excellent event planning experience, we might have an opportunity just up your alley because we are hiring. You know, we're basically 99% all volunteer based here at Xfabula, but we are starting a new position. And you can find out the all of the information on the event producer position at xfabula.org as well. And you can also apply there too. So if you are interested, please go there. Please go there for all Story Slam community-based things. We got you. We have it covered at xfabula.org.
And if you want to hear these stories again or share them, XFabula Radio is at WUWM.com as well as on the air Saturdays and Sundays in this 3 o'clock hour. Leah, thank you. See you at the All-Star Show.
All righty.